confidentiality agreements. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So who, I guess we should start with, what is a confidentiality agreement?
Well, if you're entering into a deal or entering into negotiations on a deal, you're going to want to see a lot of information that your target thinks is confidential, and it is. It's proprietary information about their business, their operations, their finances, employees, patents, and other intellectual property. You know, a lot of stuff that is very confidential and in some cases proprietary to the business. And before they let you see that, they want to have an understanding, an agreement that you're going to keep that information confidential and only use it for specified limited purposes, and you know, return it or destroy any notes you've made of it if you know, things don't move forward.
And who typically negotiate them? Is this something a junior lawyer might be able to handle?
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, they're fairly standardized. You know, in my experience, most of the confidentiality agreements that I have seen tend to look very much alike. It's usually the lawyers, either directly or through the bankers, that do it. The first markups may well be, you know, the more junior level lawyers who've got some experience in the deal, because there's typically a handful of issues that you'll have. You know, senior people will look at it, they'll flag them. You know, they will give some guidance, but the markup and exchanging the documents back and forth, it's not unusual to have the associates or the lower to mid-level lawyers involved in the transaction, you know, doing the blocking and tackling on these.
And we have another podcast on letters of intent. So what, how do they compare, and how does the negotiation differ between a confidential agreement and a letter of intent?
Yeah, letters of intent tend to be pretty elaborate, because what you're trying to accomplish there is essentially surfacing all of the major issues on a transaction, so that you can get an understanding on them, a non-binding one presumably, before you move forward and start spending an awful lot of money on lawyers and commitment fees and that type of thing. The confidentiality agreement would typically precede a letter of intent. It's usually the first thing that gets signed when somebody's interested in doing a deal. They're typically much briefer. As I said, there's sort of a somewhat standardized form for these that these take, and there's usually only a handful of issues to discuss. It doesn't mean that you can't have some serious talks about them, but they typically, the negotiation moves fairly quickly because people are anxious to get going on the deal.
And how does who's typically signing the confidentiality agreements?
I mean, the classic one would be you'd have a potential buyer that would sign the document, and but sometimes sellers too. If there's going to be reverse due diligence, which is the case if you have if you're going to be getting stock, for example, you may need to do some due diligence as a seller on the issuer of that stock, or if there are you know, financing or other contingencies to the buyer's offer, you may want to do your own due diligence on. So both sides may sign them. They purport to sometimes you get discussions about, well, what about the folks who were involved in the deal, my lawyers, my bankers, et cetera, and dealing with those people can sometimes create some negotiations. Most typically, I think people basically assume responsibility for the actions of the folks that they retain. Sometimes it can get a little bit more dicey when you're dealing with the language that's in a standstill, because oftentimes people will try and bind the advisors and the bankers and financing sources, and there's usually some pushback on that, particularly from the banks that really don't want to be obligated under that agreement for, you know, to just, from their business perspective, they're just not willing to sign up for it.
And does every deal have a confidentiality agreement?
Pretty much. I mean, I think that every negotiated deal, I think you're going to have a confidentiality agreement, because the issues are always there. There's, you know, if you want to do due diligence, so you can come up with your valuation and identify any issues that might make you want to walk away from the deal. But if you're going to have that opportunity, the company that's giving it to you wants to make very certain that you're not going to misuse it. So you need to have some sort of contractual arrangement in place to protect them.
And how have these confidentiality agreements evolved over the years? How they look?
You know, in recent Yeah, in recent years, I think I've probably seen more changes and more action on confidentiality agreements than we've had in the prior 3 decades that I've been practicing. You know, there's been case law coming out of Delaware on issues that I think people hadn't really focused on. That these don't ask, don't waive provisions and standstill agreements have become more controversial. But those standstill provision basically says I'm going to be at arm's length with you guys on this deal. I'm not going to, you're running the show here, and I'm not going to come in and lob in an offer or go public and use this information to launch a proxy contest or a hostile tender offer or basically do anything aggressive to you. And there's language that they put in these agreements that says, and you're not going to, for the period that we've agreed to do this, you're not going to ask to amend this provision or ask us to waive this this provision. So essentially, it think of it as putting some duct tape over the mouth of a buyer. And that's something the courts have focused in on and said, in a lot of these situations, these boards have an obligation to maximize shareholder value, and muzzling somebody that might lob in a bid at a later date, that may not be consistent with those obligations. Well, there's a good reason to have it, because if you're in a competitive process, if you have this kind of a provision in your standstill, it's designed to kind of encourage people to not game the process and sort of lay in the weeds, but come forward with their best offer. But it's something that's been questioned by the courts. There was a point, I think, where people were a little bit concerned with that Delaware may have said these things are dead. Now it's, we understand the business purpose for them, but we're still uncomfortable with them. So there more and more you're seeing people build some sort of escape valve in them, whether they terminate when a deal is in place or whether they, have an ability for people to come back privately to amend, so there's not some public disclosure issue being used to ramp up pressure on the board, but that's one area where there's been a lot of change in recent years, and people have also become more circumspect about non-solicitation language of employees. The antitrust regulators have made that clear that there can be problems with those provisions under the antitrust laws. There are also a whole case law on implied standstills. You may not have an express standstill in the agreement, but you've got language in there that limits the circumstances under which the confidential information is going to be used, and that can people can apply a standstill from that. So there's been a lot of action here, and this is all in the last 4 or 5 years. There's been a lot of evolution in a little bit of time.
Great stuff. Thanks.
You're welcome.